Continuing with Mitzvah Shin Pei Vav 386, which is the mitzvah to wear tzitzis, vida. No. Sha'af al pi she'ein chiyuv mitzvah zo min ha-Torah elash kishyesh lo la'adam kisus arba kinafayim. That according to the Torah, you're only required to wear tzitzis if you're wearing a four-cornered garment. If you're not wearing a four-cornered garment, you don't have to wear tzitzis. Ella, kishyesh lo la'adam kisus arba kinafayim. Sorry. Kamo she'ein chiyuv mitzvahs maika ella b'mishyesh lo gag. That... you don't have to, you know, there's a mitzvah that you're supposed to put a fence around a roof to prevent people from falling off. So if you have no roof, you're not required to put a makeh. You're not required to put a railing. If you have no house, you're not required to put up a mezuzah. It's only for people who either own or are on a derabbana level, rent a house. The question comes in Hanukkah. So what if you have no house, and where do you light Hanukkah candles? Because Hanukkah candles have to be lit in your house. That's also a shaila. In such a case, perhaps there's no requirement to light Hanukkah candles, and you just make the bracha by seeing someone else's Hanukkah candles.
Is that halakha l'maisa?
Yeah. If you don't light Hanukkah candles at all, if there's going to be a night where you don't light Hanukkah candles at all, then you, when you see Hanukkah candles lit by someone else, you make Shasa Nisim Lavoseinu by Amin Mayim Bazmanas. Not Lahadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah, obviously, but you make the second bracha when you see the candles. There's a famous story that happened here in Washington Heights, when Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav's father, lived here in Washington Heights. So he was choshesh for a minority opinion that thought of this opinion himself, that maybe what it means is that you're supposed to say Shasim Nisim Lavoseinu by Yamim Mayim Bezman Hazeh the first time you see or light Hanukkah candles that night. So maybe the normative psak is that you don't make it on seeing someone else's candles unless you're not lighting that night at all. He says maybe you should make it the first time you see Hanukkah candles. So what he used to do is when he would go home from the base medrash in the evening to light Hanukkah candles, he used to walk like this to make sure that he wouldn't see anyone else's Hanukkah candles. So to make sure that he would be able to make the bracha on his own Hanukkah candles according to all opinions. It's a little funny because the point of Hanukkah candles is presume nisa, that people are supposed to see Hanukkah candles, but okay. But that's what he did apparently. Ava Pikein, he's Irunu Chachomim, the mitzvah zo harbe, the Amru Sheroi Lechazeracha Reha, Aleha. That the sages told us that even though technically if you don't have a four corner garment, nevertheless you should try to go out of your way to obtain a four corner garment in order to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. The Gemara tells a story about Rav Ketina. That a Rav Ketina met an angel. So the angel said to him, Nu, why aren't you wearing tzitzis? So he says, I don't have four-corner garments. The angel says, Nu, you wear a garment, a certain type of garment in the summer, a different type of garment in the winter, all in order to avoid wearing tzitzis. You're just trying to avoid the mitzvah of tzitzis, and that's really bad. So that's the source in Chazal themselves, that ideally one is not supposed to, at least, go out of one's way to avoid the mitzvah, and perhaps, again, different interpretations of the story in terms of exactly what it means and exactly how much it's encouraging to wear tzitzis at all times, but that you're supposed to, if at all possible, go out of your way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis.
What if you see someone else's tzitzis?
No.
Just like if you see someone else's Hanukkah candles.
No, that's different. The mitzvah of tzitzis is for sure to wear it yourself. There's no mitzvah to look at someone else's tzitzis.
Because it says, the whole idea is
urizemoso. The asulam seems like a mivik damlo or something. That's what it says. It means it's a continuation of the discussion it's your tzitzis.
Your tzitzis.
There's no mitzvah to look at someone else's tzitzis. It's only your own tzitzis. So this, of course, is the institution of the talis katan. That in the olden days, in the times of Chazal, the standard garments were four corners. They were the outer garment that everyone wore was a large shawl, it's called a hemation, I think, like a toga. It's a large thing that you wrap around yourself at four corners. So that, of course, was chayiv and tzitzis. So the garment, people's standard garments were chayiv and tzitzis. But then when you get to the Middle Ages, and instead of these nice, flowy, Middle Eastern, nice, cool garments, we have these tight, constraining Western garments that you know are very are cut to the shape of the body. So and they button in the front, and they have a totally different methods of wearing clothing. So there was no more opportunity to naturally fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis, which is in sometime in the Middle Ages. There was the development of a talus cotton, which is a nice little four-corner garment that can go under your clothes. Again, we discussed in the first year that there are those who say that's not chayiv and tzitzis. But okay, but we assume that it is chayiv and tzitzis. That's why we wear a talus cotton as much as possible. Men wear talus cotton as much as possible in order to voluntarily bring upon themselves the obligation to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. The Amru, so technically speaking, I mean, people are very stringent about this. They play, they play ball in the tzitzis, and they, they do all these things, which you think you wouldn't necessarily. So that's why we're mostly nefesh to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis as much as possible. Though strictly speaking, according to halacha, there's no requirement, and some poskim will tell you that if there's a reason that you're to want to avoid wearing your talus cotton, like if it's going to get shvitzi, you're going to get sweat in the talus cotton, it's going to prevent you from playing a ball game, so you don't really have to wear it. But for some reason, people tend to be extra machmir about this, and in high school, we had a whole Musar Shmuz. Maybe it was about a yarmulke, whatever. How it's a big nisayon to take not to wear your yarmulke while you play basketball. And okay, no, the same thing with tzitzis. But different people take this to a different level of seriousness. Yeah,
I've heard that I think it's Morocco that normal men do not wear a talus cotton at all, like maybe tzaddikim did or something like that. Have you heard that at all?
Heard that. I know. Again, it's not a violation of any halacha, but it's I would be surprised because by recent generations, which is when you would have heard about what Moroccan Jews did, so it was pretty much widespread throughout the Jewish world that people wore a talus cotton pretty much at all times, or at least as much as possible.
But not at night.
Well, no, you're supposed to wear a talus cotton
at night.
I mean, in the evenings. Then you don't.
It's dinner
time. Right. If it happens to be after dark, so you should still wear the talus cotton, because according to the opinion of the Rosh, you fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. Because remember, there's the machlokes that we discussed last time between the Rambam and the Rosh, that the Rambam holds the mitzvah only applies during the daytime, whereas the Rosh holds it applies to a daytime garment, even if you wear the garment at night. So therefore, you fulfill the mitzvah, according to the Rosh, if you wear your talus cotton at night. But while you're actually sleeping, so again, except for great tzaddikim, actually, I read recently that Rav Eliyashiv did not wear his talus cotton. He said he personally did not wear his talus cotton to sleep, but he says it's a nice thing to do. If he really thought it was a nice thing to do, why didn't he do it?
Because
I don't know. He wasn't up to that level? No, he was a good lador. He can't be... What?
He wanted to let the other people off the hook, so they shouldn't feel bad if they're not doing it.
That's why he didn't wear tchelis either, maybe. That's why he's maybe. So, okay. I don't know. I don't know if he really worked that. I don't know. He probably bets and thought it was totally unnecessary, but just if people think they're doing a nice thing, then
why stop him?
Yeah. Yeah. The mitzvah, okay. The Amru, Shehizir, Vahasha Zoyerba, Zocheu Mishamshin, Oso Avodim Rabim. That if you fulfill this mitzvah properly, then you're going to get a lot of servants. Sharia Kosuv, Shkala V'talaba Kol HaMitzvos. That the Torah made the other mitzvos dependent on the mitzvah of tzitzis. Therefore, you're eventually going to be zochen the other mitzvos if you wear tzitzis properly. Shenemar, Urisem Oso Uzchartem Es Kol Mitzvos Hashem. That when you see the tzitzis, you're going to be reminded not to sin. So therefore, you should wear tzitzis all the time, and you're going to eventually become super religious if you wear your tzitzis.
And you'll get a lot of servants.
Well, I think that means a mitzvos. It means doesn't mean that you're going to get a lot of slaves. It just means that you're going to get all the zchusim, the merits of the mitzvos are going to come to you if you wear the mitzvah of tzitzis. There's a famous story in the Gemara talking about how important it is to wear tzitzis perhaps all the time, where there was a fellow who was fond of visiting prostitutes. So he heard about a very expensive, very skilled prostitute in some faraway land. So he said he saved up the money to pay her the money that she was that she charged, and he undertook the voyage to the faraway land to visit this famous prostitute. And when he was getting undressed, so his tzitzis came and slapped him in the face. And that's what prevented him from engaging in the sin. And he was chozer b'tshuva, he repented, and he became a great Talmud Chacham. Okay, so it's a beautiful story.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Maybe it's the story that the prostitute was so impressed by this that she decided to continue.
Yes, that's part of the story. Yes.
Yeah,
so then, the story. No, then they got married.
They got married. Okay. Oh,
then
okay.
They got married, and she became
virtue rewarded. All
she became his. She became his lawfully wedded wife, and they got. He got to enjoy her services, in a permissible manner. Yeah. Okay.
So, what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is wearing or seeing.
Wearing.
Even if you don't see them.
Correct.
Ah.
It's part of the point of the mitzvah is to be able to see it at least some of the time. But the main mitzvah is seeing. Urisimoso is really, in terms of the actual pinpointed halachic thing that Urisimoso tells you, is that the tzitzis are a daytime mitzvah, not a nighttime mitzvah, whatever that means between the Rambam and the Rush. Okay. That if you wear tzitzis and tefillin and you have a mezuzah on your house, then you're not going to sin. Shenemar ve'achut ha-meshulosh lo v'imheira yinaseik. That it says in Koheles that a three-ply rope is not easily going to be severed. So therefore, if you have the three mitzvos that remind you of the other mitzvos, that there are the tzitzis and the mezuzah and the tefillin, so then you can rest assured that you're going to stay religious and you're not going to engage in sins. Yeah.
In Kriya Shema, the inclusion of the the parsha of tzitzis,
Right.
That's just the rabbanan that we say it.
Right. Right, according to, except the Rambam,
And also because the whole business where you say
Yitzias Mitzrayim.
Remembering that, isn't it confusing to have, you think it was elevated at the same level as,
Well, according to the Rambam, he seems to say that all three parshiyos are deraisa, so how that works exactly is a little bit questionable, but probably because that the third parsha includes the Yitzias Mitzrayim. You have to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim both in day and night, even though you don't wear tzitzis at night. I mean, according to Rambam or the Rush, whatever that means, it's a daytime mitzvah, so the mitzvah doesn't technically apply at night. Nevertheless, we say it in Kriya Shema at night just because of that line, because you're supposed to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim both in day and night. No one says in Haggadah, right? Lo zechisi shetiyam Yetzias Mitzrayim b'leilos, nu kol yamecha yecha olama. Okay, good, Okay, fine. So you have all these mitzvahs that constantly remind you. As David HaMelech said, that he was, except when he was in the bathhouse, he was always surrounded by mitzvos. Then in the bathhouse, he had bris milah. Okay, so you have all these mitzvos that remind you to be on the straight and narrow. You, wherever you look, you're going to see either tzitzis, you're going to have the tefillin on, or you are going to have the mezuzah. So women only have the mezuzah. So, but they're more religious naturally, so they only need the mezuzah to remind them to do all the mitzvos. They don't need all these other things. V'dinei mitzvah zo maseches menaches perek revi'i timtza osan. This is discussed in maseches menaches. Why? So what does tzitzis have to do with menaches?
What is menaches?
The meal offerings.
Oh.
So the most interesting, for most people, part of maseches menaches is the part that talk about, it talks about tefillin and mezuzah and tzitzis. So it talks about, because it's talking about something related to menaches, where it says that if you don't do this in the menachos, so it's not ma'akev, meaning that if certain things that you're supposed to do l'chatchila, but if you don't do it, so the mincha still counts, and certain things if you don't do it, the mincha doesn't count. So then it goes into, it says, so all the parashiyos of the tefillin are ma'akev each other, you have to have all four parashiyos of the tefillin are no good, and then it says, and then it starts talking about whether the tcheles and the lovan are ma'akev each other, where you should still wear tzitzis even if you only have tcheles or you only have lovan. So it got stuck in there in Masechet Menachos. So it's a very interesting discussion there in the Gemara about these Mishnayos. Okay. B'noeges mitzvah zo bizcharim. This applies to males because it's a time-bound positive commandment.
What's it?
Yeah, because only during it's only daytime. It's only daytime.
That makes it time-bound?
Yeah, sure. Time sounds like a time to me. B'chol mokom uvachol, even tefillin, the mitzvah of tefillin. So there's a machlokes tanoim as to whether the mitzvah of tefillin applies at night or not. So we paskin actually the laila zman tefillin, that we do the mitzvah of tefillin does apply at night, but you don't wear tefillin at night, lemaisa, because we're concerned that maybe you'll fall asleep wearing them. You don't want to fall asleep wearing the tefillin, so you don't wear tefillin at night. But technically the mitzvah of tefillin does apply at night, but what's why are women obligated to wear tefillin? Because you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif. So that's enough to consider it a time-bound positive commandment and exempt women from the mitzvah of tefillin.
Everything is time bound. Just depends on how big the boundaries are.
Why?
Let's say on
the mitzvah of Micah.
Shalosh Shuvos on Shabbos.
Yeah. So that's different. So women and men are the same regarding Shabbos.
Why?
Because the special thing, because Shamor and Zachar. That in one place in the Ten Commandments that it says Zachar is Yom Shabbos. Shamor is Yom Shabbos. Kachu, meaning you have to keep Shabbos. And women are obligated to keep Shabbos because Shabbos is a lo saseh. Shabbos is a negative command. You're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. So since it says Shamor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, and then in the other Ten Commandments it says Zochor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, remember it. So that teaches us that those who are obligated to keep Shabbos are also obligated to remember the things associated with Shabbos, meaning do the other mitzvahs associated with Shabbos, like make Kiddush. You know, Kiddush is a time-bound positive commandment, yes? So therefore, women are obligated to make Kiddush. So therefore, since there's the Torah equated all things regarding Shabbos for men and women, therefore even the Derabbanans or Divrei Kabbalah of Shabbos, such as eating Shalosh Shudas, so men and women are exactly the same for all things regarding Shabbos. That's the, yes, but you're right, technically it is a time-bound positive. There are exceptions. There are exceptions that if the Torah specifically includes women, so certainly, but the general assumption, unless you know otherwise, is that women are exempt from time-bound positive commandments. Women are obligated in Korban Pesach also. And they're obligated in eating matzah. That's a time-bound positive commandment because the Torah includes them explicitly. Avalon v'nikevo. So this applies not to women. V'im rotzu anikevos lis atev misatvos below bracha. If a woman wants to wear a talis, she could wear the talis without a bracha. Yeah.
Is there anybody who says that she should say a bracha?
Oh, that's the next line. Uptas amru afilu b'bracha. That's the next line in the Sefer. That's the next line in the Sefer Achinuch. That some say that if a woman volunteers to perform the mitzvah tzitzis, then she can make a bracha. This is a disagreement that is found regarding all time-bound positive commandments, whether women are allowed to make the bracha if they so choose. Yeah.
I thought this was a machlokas, you know, Ashkenaz and Sfardim, that the Sfardim are more machmir on, you know, on the false taking name of the Lord.
That's true.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so the Ashkenazim say that's perfectly okay, but the Sfardim are choshesh that, you know, if you don't need to say the bracha, you might be, you know, actually.
Correct. So Sfardim in general are more concerned. So, yeah. Yeah, so Sfardim in general are more concerned about bracha levatola because they generally hold that a bracha levatola is an iser deraisa.
It seems that way.
That avlo sisa taking the name of the Lord in vain, whereas other Rishonim with Ashkenazim generally go like, hold that take a bracha levatola is not, unless it's totally, totally irrelevant, and they would not hold that would be an iser deraisa because, based fundamentally, it's praising the name of God, so it's not it's not really levatala. But regarding the bracha on a mitzvah zei shazman grama, so the question is by a mitzvah zei shazman grama. So can a woman say asher kitshado mitzvos avitzivanu that God never commanded her to wear tzitzis or shake a lulav or any of these things? How can you make the bracha asher kitshado mitzvos avitzivanu? So Rabbeinu Tam says, well, avitzivanu means commanded us.
How do you say that on a mitzvah, the rabbanan?
Said we have to listen to the rabbis.
Yeah, I know, but that's not God.
The
rabbis, you know.
Asher
Gishon Mitzvah. As much as one.
This is the Gemara. The Gemara discusses this. It says Vehichon Mitzivanu. No, how could you say Asher Gishon Mitzvah Sav Mitzivanu when it's talking about a mitzvah the rabbanan? The answer is that Lo Sosor. When the Torah says Lo Sosor Min Adavar Shegidu L'Chai Minu Smol, you have to follow the shofet, or the religious leaders that are in each generation. So part of that, so that's included. It means you commanded us, sanctified us with your commandments. You commanded us to listen to the rabbis, and the rabbis said we have to light Hanukkah candles. So, but for a woman, so then the question just is, v'tzivanu doesn't mean us, you know, me, or does it mean the Jewish people in general? So the Rambam holds. That you don't make a woman cannot make a bracha on these mitzvos, and the Rabbeinu Tam holds that a woman can make a bracha on these mitzvos because the bracha is not totally wrong. So this is followed by Ashkenazi and Sephardi communities. So Ashkenazim, by the women generally make a bracha on these mitzvos, and by Sephardim, the women do not make a bracha on these mitzvos. In fact, there were many Sephardi communities in the past where the women did make a bracha on these mitzvahs. The minag was that they did. That's probably because it feels weird to perform a mitzvah without making a bracha. Yeah. I mean, it feels like fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rav Avadia Yosef, was one of his things is that he wanted to do away with the Sephardi minhagim that had crept up in various communities over the years that contradicted the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. He felt that that Sephardim should return to the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, and the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch says that follows the sheet of the Rambam, the women are not allowed to make these brachas. So he feels that many Sephardic women conduct themselves accordingly nowadays, that, some had the custom even from before, but he felt even the Sephardic women that have that had the custom, or their mothers did make brachas on mitzvah Sei Shazman Groma, they should stop, and they should no longer make brachas on mitzvah Sei Shazman Groma.
That also includes the brachas before the Shema, for example?
Whoa. Yeah, he goes really far. Rav Avadia goes really far, and he holds, this I think was not accepted at all in Sephardi communities before him, and I think many people, Sephardim nowadays, even who otherwise go like Rav Avadia, don't go like this. But he says that women are not allowed to say, I think the bracha even in Baruch Shamar and Yishtabach, I'm not 100% sure, but he says certainly the brachas of Kriya Shema,
right,
women have to say without Shemu Malchus. Baruch Atah Yotzer Or Vorei Choshech, and then the Baruch Yotzer HaMeoros. So that is a bigger chiddush, because over there there's no Asher Kitshon Mitzvosa Vitzivanu. You don't say Asher Kitshon Mitzvosa Vitzivanu Kriyashma, just part of the order of the davening. It's a bracha that you say in the morning. So that is a bigger chiddush. Again, he has basis for what he says, but it's such a basic
foundational prayer that everybody, quote, says. To cut you out of that
Their whole community doesn't say it.
Well,
no, except they always did, and they still do, it seems so. You know. I mean, there's only thing Shadurim published which said,
I'm sure his daughters and daughters-in-law don't say it, but
right, that's it. What did the Siddur say? What does Sephardi Siddur say?
A lot of Sephardi Siddurim nowadays are according to the Pesachim of Rav Avadia, so that they put in brackets. Women should not say this section. But it's not. It is a little much. I agree with you over there. But okay, there is another problem with women wearing tzitzis, that it could potentially be a violation of lo silbash, that wearing a male garment. That if a woman wears a talis, then I think it says in Targum Yonasan, in one of the more midrashic targumim, when it says, in Parshas Kiseitze, lo yilbash gever sim lo yekli gever al yishav lo yilbash gever simlas isha. So it translates that, it's not just a literal translation, but it translates that is that a woman should not wear tzitzis and tefillin, which are garments that are designated for a man. So that's one reason why we never heard of women. Classically, we never heard of women volunteering to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis by wearing a talis. But however, what?
No, you could design a talis that people have that do not look like the big black and white,
A blanket is not either a male garment or a female garment.
A blanket is not a garment, correct. It's not Chayim Tzitzis. But it's, you could design a feminine talis, yes, if it has, at the risk of being stereotypical, if it has flowers and pink and all these things. So then, but the question is, Be'etzem wearing a garment with tzitzit, so maybe according to Targum Yonasan, is a male thing. So this is a very intense discussion in the post-game as to what exactly are the parameters of a male and female garment. So famously, I mean, this comes into play famously regarding the issue of women wearing pants. That classically, for the last few hundred years, before the 1950s or whatever, so a woman did not wear pants at all. So if a woman would wear pants, then that would be a violation of
Begit. Women used to wear harem pants.
What?
Women used to wear harem pants.
What's that?
These sort of flowing.
When?
Beginning. You didn't wear them in the street. You know, all the paintings by Delacroix and stuff of women wearing
hair.
Turkish
also,
style.
Also, people even in the 20s and 30s, people were wearing flowers.
Yeah, Catherine Hepburn.
You can find people wearing pictures of
Marlene Dietrich, famously.
All right. Well.
There's a difference between...
Okay, so, whatever. In the 19th century, fine. Besides for these pants. So the general... Okay, women did not wear pants. So the question is... The question is nowadays that women's pants have a distinctively feminine look to them. So is that considered a women's garment? Is women allowed to wear that or not? So this is most poskim say that no. If you look in the sources, when it says what's a male garment, what's a female garment, that it goes according to the minhag hamakom. So if it's whatever in that place and time, what's considered a male garment, what's considered a female garment? If a man lives in Scotland, he's allowed to wear a kilt, whereas in other places that would potentially be considered begadisha because women don't wear skirts at all in other places. Men don't wear skirts at all in other places. So the same thing too. So if a woman wears pants in New York City, so then in 2019, then she does not violate the prohibition of begedish. And others say no. So the famously the Minchas Yitzchak Dayan Weiss, who was the Rav of Manchester, and then he was the Rav of the Eidah Charedis in Yerushalayim. So he was asked the question, is a woman allowed to wear pants when she goes skiing? So he said, who told her to go skiing?
Oh, that's mean.
So he held that no, since the basic tzura of the garment hasn't changed, that men's pants and women's pants look essentially similar, even if there's slightly feminine frills on women's pants, he felt that the prohibition still applies, and that even if a woman wears pants nowadays of any type, she would potentially violate the prohibition of wearing a masculine garment. This, of course, is independent of the issue of modesty. That it's a whole different discussion, which we're not...
Pants versus miniskirts.
Pants! Pants! Yes. If you're choosing between pants and a miniskirt, I paskin 100% that a woman should wear pants. You heard me. You can quote me on this. The rabbi said a woman should wear pants. No.
I do not own a miniskirt. So I have no choice.
Oh, so there you go. For you, there's no heter.
Pajama pants, by the way, even in very right-wing circles, are considered to be perfectly fine for women.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yes. Pants? So, like I said, the normative sock nowadays is that the problem with women wearing pants is not a problem of a lo yilbash. It's only a problem of tznius of modesty, that it's not an appropriately modest garment for Jewish women. But that doesn't apply for if she's wearing pajamas in her own room and she's not going out into the street. Then, according to everyone but the most ardent chassidim of the Minchas Yitzchak, and certain chassidish groups maybe who hold that a woman is 100% allowed to wear pajama pants is accepted in, as far as I'm aware, I haven't necessarily spoken to everyone personally, but in even in the most Beis Yaakov type of circles, women do wear pajama pants. It's only in, again, certain chassidish groups, maybe Yerushalmi groups, that women are makbid to wear nightgowns. They don't wear pants at all, even to sleep. Yeah. Because we're makbid on a higher standard of modesty, both for men and women, than is accepted in the Goyish world. The question is, if really serious frum women would start wearing pants, would that allow it to be done? So according to the strict halacha, again, even if a lot of things regarding tznius are dependent on the minag of, again, serious frum women, that doesn't mean that the religious leaders, both male and female, don't get a voice in saying what they feel is appropriate.
Moshe said, though, that didn't he give some heter about if they're very flowy and it looks like a skirt?
It's
a
shnius, not Bayanish.
Right? Moshe said that?
I think so, yeah.
I
think Rav Henkin, I've heard. So Rav Henkin's grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Holtzlenken, writes that his grandfather held that he didn't understand what this whole fuss about women wearing pants. He thinks that in many cases pants are more modest than skirts, which is true.
Yeah.
It's like I said before, it's certainly true that if a woman is choosing between a...
or a tight pencil skirt.
Right. If a skirt, even if a skirt goes to, you know, well past the knees, if it's extremely tight, so then yes, al pi halacha,
it's
preferable. Correct.
Attention getting.
100%. Then yes, al pi halacha, it is absolutely... preferable to wear pants, halacha lemaisa, yeah. That's why tznius is a lot of is subjective in a lot of things. That's why you have to use a little bit of seichel again. If the choice, the most correct thing for a Jewish woman to wear is a modest skirt. But if that's just not going to happen, and she's choosing between again, if the pants are really tight and the skirt's really tight, so Mike goes, why as well go with the skirt. But if he's choosing between more modest pants and a less modest skirt, so except according to the Minchas Yitzchak, then we would certainly say that it would be preferable for a woman to wear modest pants than it would be to wear an immodest skirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned tefillin, though, in a certain kind of... Tefillin aren't doing begadim, though, are they?
Why not?
Ah. They're not, really?
It doesn't apply only to clothing.
It's articles.
It says that a woman is not allowed to carry a sword.
Right.
So maybe she should wear a shawl for davening. So why do we nowadays wear a talis for davening and not at other times? Because the talis, there's an idea, a special idea, that when you daven, you're supposed to be completely enwrapped. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be like you wear the most, not just the basic clothes that you need in order to be covered, but rather to put on an extra layer in honor of davening. So the classic way,
only
the classic...
Morning, though. You don't have to bother with it.
So the classic Jewish way of putting on a special garment for davening and completely enwrapping oneself for davening is via a talis, and the talis has tzitzis on it. So you fulfill the mitzvah tzitzis. So the question is, why don't we do this for all the tefillos? Why not do it for mincha also? Maybe Ma'ariv. Okay, Ma'ariv, you're exempt from tzitzis at the time usually, but...
I think Teimonim wear their talis during... I've seen them put on mincha.
So really, maybe you should. Maybe you should wear a talis and maybe tefillin also for davening mincha. Maybe.
But you're just supposed to put...
You're supposed to wear tefillin all day long. You're supposed to wear talis. Okay. But especially for davening, so you're supposed to wear the... Maybe you should put them back on for mincha. But generally, this is why people for mincha are, if you look in yeshiva circles, they're makbid always to wear a jacket and a hat for davening,
right?
Because like extra honorable garments, even though technically speaking, the halacha of how you're supposed to dress for davening really just relates to how you would appear in front of an important individual in that time and place. And nowadays, people don't wear hats. There's no really Indian to wear a hat for davening, but because we have this halachic idea that you're supposed to be extra enwrapped in an extra garment that's above and beyond what you normally wear, so that's why people are makbid to wear jackets and specifically hats for davening, even though in the regular fashion, hats are unfortunately, I like hats, hats are unfortunately out of style somewhat. Oh, they're coming back in, maybe.
Is there an implication that the bigger the talus, the better?
No.
So short talus, like the reform?
No, that's not it. No, it has to cover your body.
Yeah, that's a scarf.
Yes, it has to cover your body, but it doesn't mean that if you wear one, if a man who's 5'2 wears a talus that's appropriate for a 7 foot tall person, so then that there's no certainly no point in doing that.
Right.
Yes, of course, it's worse to drag on the floor. So, but you wear it specifically by Shacharis, because by Shacharis you wear the parsha. You have the parsha of tzitzis. Yeah, okay. So, but really, maybe for fundamentally, you should wear a talus and tefillin for mincha as well. That's why some people recommend the Chaz Nish, the Brisker Rav. Others say that if one is davening mincha bichidus, one doesn't have the opportunity to daven with a minyan, so maybe you should put on talis and tefillin, because if you tefillah betzibor, davening with a minyan is a maila, it is an extra good thing that you do while you're davening. Not extra, you really should do it, but it's a good thing that enhances your davening. So if you don't have the opportunity to do that enhancement, So maybe you should do a different enhancement and you should put on the talis and tefillin in order to daven mincha. And in fact, if you see, if you come to our shul on a fast day, when do we have a minyan on a fast day? On Tainus Esther, we had mincha on a fast day. So the Sfardim put on talis and tefillin for mincha on a fast day. Why?
Not just Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av is because you're postponing it for a moment.
Right. So they put on talis and tefillin because on a fast day, you have fewer brachas. You're supposed to make mea brachas. You're supposed to make 100 brachas every day. So in order to get extra brachas, you put on the talis and tefillin back on for mincha. But that reflects the fact that fundamentally we should be wearing a talis and tefillin for mincha every day. It's just, we don't.
That's right. You're right. If you wait, where it's, yeah, right. You obviously put on tefillin more than once in a day. You'll make the bracha on the tefillin.
Right. There's a hefsek between you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Sure. Okay.
And which is also why in many shuls, including ours, the minhag is that if you get an honor at mincha, if you get an aliyah or something that requires you to put a talis at Shabbos mincha or another mincha where there's kriyas haTorah, then you don't take the talis off until after kedusha. Mm-hmm. Why? What's the point of that minhag? The reason is that fundamentally, you should always be davening with the talis on. So what? You already have the talis on, so you're going to take it off before you daven Shmoneh Esrei? How about not? So you keep the talis on while you're davening mincha. But fundamentally, again, one should, the Rambam says, fundamentally, one should always daven with the talis, even though the minhag is to be lenient, except in Shacharis, and tefillin as well, when appropriate. V'over al zeh, v'lovash beged semer opishtim, if you wear a wool or linen garment, gadol kashir shamarnu, if it has the shear, v'u shelo, and it belongs to you, v'lo hitil bo tzitzis, bitel aseze, you neglected to perform this positive commandment, v'im hu shel sha'ar minim, bitel mitzvah derabanan. And again, if it's not wool or linen, the Sefer Chinuch holds that such a garment is only obligated in tzitzis on a derabanan level. V'im eino shelo, what if the talis does not belong to you? If the garment doesn't belong to you, elish shalo, so you borrowed it. So kol shloshim yom kilomar miyom shesheolo atashlum shloshim yom petura min atzitzis. So for 30 days, you're exempt from tzitzis. And after 30 days, as it starts looking like, maybe this isn't just a borrowing, but maybe it's going to be a permanent fixture of your wardrobe, at least for the time being, then you are then on a derabanan level, so you're required to affix tzitzis to this garment. So this is why, by the way, that in certain situations where you want to get out of making a bracha, so on the talis. So, for example, when you have slichos, and for slichos, you're the shliach tzibur is putting on a talis at nighttime. Mm-hmm. So, according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to make a bracha because now is not the correct time for tzitzis because it's nighttime. But according to the Rush, you are allowed to make a bracha because you're putting on a daytime garment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the problem. So what would you do if you put on your own talis? We normally hold suffix brachos. Lahakel, when you have a doubt as to whether you're supposed to make a bracha, you err on the side of not making the bracha. But then, that's not good, because you're not supposed to do a mitzvah without making the bracha either. So that's why, in such a situation, it would be preferable to borrow a talis. So a borrowed talis is not obligated in tzitzis, technically, so you wouldn't have to make a bracha. You would not make a bracha on that talis.
What about if you eat fruit before the chatamozon during a meal?
that's a totally different thing. But you do make a bracha. Yeah, The question, because in a meal,
it's not a bracha levatol.
I hope not.
So I'm asking, because in my house we never did. My father said whatever is served during a meal is part of the meal.
That's not exactly... Yeah, okay. Yeah, your father was a very religious man. I'm sure he knew what he was doing. But the question is that with a bread meal, people think it's like a magic thing that when a bread meal, you make a hamotzi and everything is covered until benching. But that's not really fundamentally correct. What it means is that during a bread meal, the food that's eaten with the bread is covered by the hamotzi because the hamotzi is the mainstay of the meal.
But it's not good nowadays.
So according to Rashi and other Rishonim, the hamotzi only covers the food that's actually normally eaten alongside the bread. So nowadays, people at a Shabbos meal, they're served the challah, they take a few bites of challah, then people are served the chicken, and who cares about the challah? you know, and then you start eating the chicken. So according to Rashi, you would have to make shahakal on the chicken, even. So we don't pass like that. We pass like Toisis, that everything that's served like as a main part of the meal is considered halachically as if it's along with the bread. So therefore, you don't have to make a bracha on the separate foods, and that motzi covers it. But if the bread is...
After bracha also.
No, the benching cover though, for the, yeah, for after bracha. Okay. But if it's something that's a dessert that's served not alongside the bread to satiate you during the meal, but rather it's completely separate from the bread, like that you take away the bread completely and it's served, and the dessert is served, you have fruit and candies or chocolates, whatever, are served at the end of the meal. So that since that's totally separate from the bread, then the normative psak is that you make a separate bracha on that, although your father apparently held that, and there are poskim that hold like this, that nowadays, since it's so normal to eat dessert at every meal, it's all considered like alongside the bread. But again, that's not the normally accepted psak, and you would have to make a bracha on dessert, unless it's cake. Cake is like bread, so cake that's covered by the hamotzi, yeah.
Now, to come back to if you borrow a talis from the shul,
yeah, you have to make a bracha.
Okay, the shul has a talis there, which is there for your use, obviously.
Correct. Right? The shul talis, you have to make a you make a bracha, yeah, when you put it on, yeah, because the shul talis is there not as it belongs to the shul and then you borrow it when you pick it up, but rather the shul has it there for everyone's use in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So in essence, when you pick up a shul talis, it's as if it's a temporary gift rather than a loan. That the idea is that you are allowed to acquire it as a gift on the condition that as soon as you're done with it, you give it back to the shul. You give it back to the shul, and whoever is next can now acquire it. That's why, some shul talisim, which are from 60 years ago, and who knows where the tzitzis are from, so then... that has to do with the kashrus of the tzitzis, but so sometimes on shul talisim I'm a bit hesitant about making a bracha, but fundamentally, assuming that the talis is a kosher talis and the tzitzis are kosher, fundamentally yes, when you use a shul talis, then you do make a bracha, even if you're just going for an aliyah or something. Yeah.
What's a non-kosher talis?
The tzitzis are broken or something like that.
There have been scandals with tzitzis making. That's one of the things in the biography of Rav Avadya Yosef, when he was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, so he discovered that some of the tzitzis factories that were under the hechsher of Rabbanut Tel Aviv were actually importing strings from Italy, where they were made by Goyim, and they were doing some minor production procedure on the strings, than thinking that tiny thing, doing it lishma for tzitzis, works. All right, one of Rav Avadya's things when he was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv is that he didn't allow that, and he actually sent mashkichim to Italy at the place that they were making these wool strings to ensure that they were made lishma. So mikan ve'elach chayav lahatil about tzitzis, that when it's after 30 days, so then you have to put on tzitzis. That's why it's important that when you buy a tzitzis, it has to be either you have to know the person who made it and has to be a good tzitzis, or you have to get it with a good hechsher. Most tzitzis that are sold in America, I believe, have a good hechsher. But again, just what we were talking about yesterday with food. So if you have any questions as to whether a hechsher on a pair of tzitzis is good, so we can discuss specific names not being recorded here on the tape. Yeah.
The 60-year-old talisim, you could just take the bad tzitzis.
Of course
the questionable ones often.
Yeah.
If the thing is still in good enough condition.
Sure, of course.
No, often the question is that the strings are torn off, you know. I mean,
just from you.
Nobody really pays attention to them in a lot of most shuls, and they, you know, right?
I mean, if the talis is 100 years old, so the religious... things in America 100 years ago. Well, who knows? It could be that there was a Judaica store and they had goyim in the back tying the tzitzis. Yeah. You really don't know. The things that are made in America, religious articles made in America 100 years ago, really you cannot be assumed to have chezkas kashrus to be presumed to be kosher.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we finished this, right?
Yes, now we finished the mitzvah tzitzis.
So wait, what about fruit soup that you serve in a meal?
Oh, at the beginning?
At the beginning?
It's in place of any other kind of soup. It's a soup.
So that's considered to be that covered, yeah.
Yeah, soup is something you have with bread.
Right, it brings your appetite on for the main dish, and that's considered to be part of the meal.
Yeah. Frida, how was the question and answer?
very interesting. Whether